This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. The Health and Human Services Department says more than 400,000 children across the country were in foster care last year. This is when minors are placed with foster parents who aim to help them develop the social, educational, and emotional skills they need. But finding the perfect home isn't always easy. The nonprofit advocate for foster children, ProKids, says there are 2,700 children in the Hamilton County Child Protection System. And these children are still susceptible to abuse and neglect and often move from home to home and from school to school. Joining us to discuss how ProKids, along with volunteer court-appointed special advocates, help these children find safe, secure, and permanent homes, our ProKids Executive Director, Tracy Cook, CASA Volunteer and Clinical Research Coordinator at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, Cameron Lowy, and CASA Volunteer, Wendell Watts. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Cameron, Wendell, and Tracy, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tracy, what does it mean to be a child in foster care? What's it like?
Well, I think if you really think about a child being in their home, some kind of abuse or neglect having occurred, but then having essentially a stranger come to their home and remove them from the only family they've ever known, even under the best of circumstances, it's traumatic. And the fear and anxiety don't end there, because the child would typically be placed in foster care, not someone again that they know, no matter how well-meaning. And the kid has a lot of questions at that point. You know, where am I exactly? Who are these people? How long will I be here? And unfortunately, no one can answer those questions right away, and probably not for some time.
What are some of the other challenges that foster kids face?
So foster care children have a lot of challenges. First of all, many of them, based on the trauma that they've experienced, not only of being abused and neglected, but also the trauma from being taken from the only family they've ever known, have experienced what some folks call toxic stress. They actually run a rate of post-traumatic stress disorder at over 20%, which is shocking when people learn that's higher than a rate that returning veterans experience.
Does it affect the child academically? I mean, does it make it tough?
Yes. Unfortunately, kids who are in foster care often move frequently. And every time they move, they typically have a new school. And they typically lose quite a few months of academic progress with each move. As a result of that, most foster care children do not graduate from high school easily, and overall, over a lifetime, only about 58% of foster care kids graduate.
Wendell, do you want to add something to that?
Yes. As Tracy said, it's really challenging for the children as they change schools. Not only are you in a new environment, you got to make new friends. Also, now you have a new study routine, and that's typically what gets sacrificed in all these moves. The homework just stops getting done because there's so many other psychological things going on with the child that they're not focused on homework. They're focused on their livelihood.
Tracy, how often are they placed with brothers and sisters? Is that an area that's a challenge as well?
It's very much a challenge. Nationally, fewer than 25% of kids in foster care are placed with their siblings. But at ProKids, we work really hard on that. And typically, over 80% of our kids are placed with siblings while they're in foster care. And we know how important those relationships are to maintain.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join the conversation that we're having about foster children. And let's talk with Nicole in Forest Park. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
My son Tristan, he is about to turn 8, and he was adopted through Hamilton County in 2011, and ProKids was very instrumental in his case. We wouldn't be the family we are today without them.
Oh, that's very wonderful. And Nicole and her husband are an amazing example of people who open their hearts and homes to our children. And when it became clear that he could not go home, they were, you know, there for him to be his forever family. And he's a very blessed child.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you would like to join us in our conversation. Were the not to say that all foster care situations can be bad, right? I mean, sometimes you do get foster care situations that work out.
Absolutely. There are amazing foster care families who change children's lives. There's just not enough of them. Mm-hmm. So about 40% of the kids we served who are taken from families in Hamilton County are actually placed outside of Hamilton County. So that tells you about the lack of foster care homes right here in our community.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that. I have a case right now, and the foster parents go above and beyond for the little girl. They've enrolled her in swim classes. She's in gymnastics. She's only three, but they're doing everything they can to give her a really stable, loving home. And it's awesome to be a part of that and to see how she's flourishing and how she's thriving as a result of her environment.
So, Tracy, how often do foster care situations work out, and how often do they not work out?
So, first of all, I would say that in terms of them working out, you can imagine that first placement. If you think about a situation in the middle of the night, maybe a domestic violence situation going on, maybe the parents both are going to be arrested by the police. There's no family friend to take the children. Literally, the police would contact 241 Kids, the centralized intake line for the county, for all allegations of abuse and neglect. That is a phone line that is staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. An investigator would come out, and they would work immediately, even in the middle of the night, on placing that child somewhere safe and secure. You can imagine that they're trying to do this all as quickly as possible. You know, many times those placements are appropriate, they're structured, the foster care parent has enough information. But this is a very overburdened, under-resourced system. So unfortunately, it might not be one child that person from Jobs and Family Services is placing that night. It may be half a dozen kids that they're trying to place. And so as much as they might want to be able to research the child's background and give information to the foster care parent, that's not always possible in the way that they would like to do it. So there are challenges just when foster care parents don't have enough information about these kids. But there also can be challenges just in terms of whether it's the right fit with the other children in the home. And that sort of thing. It also can be challenging because our kids have been traumatized, and so they have certain kinds of behaviors that might be very, very challenging to deal with. And so you do have some amazing foster care parents who are able to rise to the challenge and give kids what they need. But unfortunately, not every foster care parent is able to meet the needs. And what I would say is, of the kids who are ultimately freed for adoption, who don't go back home, who don't go to a relative, about 50% of those kids end up adopted by a foster care parent who then becomes their forever family.
Again, 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join us in the conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And how did ProKids get its start?
So ProKids began way back in 1981. It was one of the first programs of its kind in the nation. And there were three organizations that came together to found ProKids. It was Hamilton County Juvenile Court, the Cincinnati Bar Association, and the Junior League. And at the time, there were fewer than 30 court-appointed special advocate programs nationwide, and now there are about 1,000.
So how many are in the local area, you know?
So in the local area, we're basically surrounded, and people who live in those areas, work in those areas, will definitely want to look at their CASA programs. There's, you know, Butler County, Boone County, Claremont County. So there are a variety of programs. In the state of Ohio, out of the 88 counties, there are about, I think, 35 CASA program statewide.
Wendell, how did you decide to become a CASA?
It's interesting. I've always done some type of volunteer work and participated in civic activities. I served on boards locally here in Cincinnati. But I decided, you know, after coming out of my career in corporate America, I felt blessed that I wanted to do something to give back to the community. So once I became familiar with ProKids, I recognized that because of my skills in coaching youth soccer and my skills as a manager in corporate world, this was actually a good fit for me to get involved in something where I could actually make a difference doing something other than just writing a check to an organization.
Was it a hard decision to make?
Actually, no, it was not a hard decision. A little scary at times when you think about this whole well-being of the child is rest upon you. So you got to quickly get your head wrapped around the fact that, okay, now I'm the person that can have a positive influence in influencing this child for the rest of their lives.
Cameron, what about you? Why did you decide to become a volunteer advocate?
So my dad's actually a court-appointed special advocate, and he's been doing this work for at least 6 years, and he never shares any of the specifics about the cases, but he's told me what a profound impact it's had on his life and how important it was to him. And so I moved here from Oregon, and when I moved here, I sought out Pro Kids. I definitely knew that I wanted to be a court-appointed special advocate. And I called my dad, and I said, Dad, I've signed up. I'm going to go through the training. Do you think I can? What do you think? And he's like, we'll see. We'll see how you do. But that was really the impetus to me, was my dad as sort of a model for me. And then also just this idea that one extra pair of eyes on a child's life can make all the difference in the world. And we might not even see that difference. We might not even know the impact that we have, but just paying attention and being mindful and aware of a child and just that extra pair of eyes could be really impactful.
What kind of training did you go through to become an advocate?
We did about 30 hours of training, and you get all sorts of background on what these kids are going through, all sorts of resources. And I think something that I'd like to stress, because some of the friends I've talked to and I've explained what being a CASA is, they get a little intimidated and they're like, well, how do you know how to make the right decision? How do you know what to do?
Exactly, yeah.
And I just would love to stress to all of you out there that you don't go it alone. You're not flying blind. You have a whole team. You have your CASA manager. They're always there. So if you're ever unsure of like a decision you're making on behalf of a child, a foster child, you call your backup. It's a team effort. And I really respect and appreciate that, because you have access to all these resources and all these people and all these good intentioned people in the community. And all together you come and you can really impact a child.
Wendell, what was the training like for you?
It's about the same. It's about 30 hours of the training.
Were you intimidated at first when you thought about this?
Not really. The part that became intimidating when you start understanding that you don't know much.
Yes.
You don't know what resources are available.
Yes.
And then as you start learning about the resources that are available, you realize there's a lot more out there than I'm aware of.
Right.
So it's part of learning how to use your resources. It's an important part to be effective in this job. And also recognizing the fact that you are kind of like the quarterback of the team. So you got to work with your CASA managers. You got to work with Child and Family Services. You got to work with the school counselors and meet with teachers sometimes of the children, just coordinate a group effort. So that's really your job. And you just realize you're learning every day. You can never know enough to walk in and say, I know everything about this job. So a learning experience.
And Tracy, what they went through is what it's called CASA University. Is that right?
Correct. We have an initial training program. And the really exciting thing we're announcing with you first today is that we have redesigned our training. So it was 30 hours, but we know that people's time has become even tighter and tighter. So we've actually redesigned the training. So it's 21 hours in classroom, which means you can come 7 times to Pro Kids, 3 hours a time, and be done with your training. Most people, once they become a CASA, spend about 2 to 4 hours a week on their case. And that is really shocking to most people to think, how can you change the arc of a child's life in
just a short amount of time every week?
And,
yes.
And I think that's the biggest myth we want to bust, is it is that extra set of eyes, as Cameron was talking about. It is what Wendell talked about, knowing the resources and intervening with people like teachers that busy systems professionals aren't going to have time to do. So I think that's the thing that people should know is you don't have to come with any particular expertise. You just have to come with the desire to change a child's life.
We will continue our conversation about foster children, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and my guests this afternoon are ProKids Executive Director Tracy Cook, CASA Volunteer and Clinical Research Coordinator at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, Cameron Lowy, and CASA Volunteer Wendell Watts. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Tracy, what do you know about the qualifications of becoming a foster parent?
So to become a foster care parent in the state of Ohio, you have to be licensed. And up until about 4 or 5 years ago, people were licensed in Hamilton County in a variety of ways, either through the county directly, the county had their own foster care homes, or through private networks. There are a variety of private networks. Hamilton County made the decision to get out of the licensing business, and so now in Hamilton County, foster care is completely privatized. There are a variety of networks. People can get online and Google Foster Care Cincinnati, and a variety of private networks will come up, and they can look at the individual requirements. There are classes, there are requirements about the household, things like that.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Talika in Sims Township. Hi, Talika.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
I'm glad to be on the show. I had a question. I have been trying to adopt a kid, and I got to know that it can only be done after I have fostered the kid first. I mean, from the places that I called. And I'm also not a citizen. Although a citizen, I really, really want to adopt a kid, especially because I have a son with autism and I want him to have a sibling so that he can have a company. So, I mean, I have all that anybody else might have, but I'm probably not eligible, or I don't know what the eligibility is. So I was wondering what qualifications or what eligibility criteria you have as far as citizenship and residential qualifications are concerned in order to foster or adopt a child.
Well, first of all, thank you so very much for your interest in stepping up for a child. ProKids does not license foster care homes, and so we're not involved in that process. But if you Google Foster Care Cincinnati, you'll come up with probably half a dozen results of foster care agencies here in Hamilton County. A lot of people do foster first and ultimately adopt the child that they're fostering. Sometimes that's a way that people kind of ease into the situation and make decisions as they go. But again, you could contact one of the private foster care agencies to find out more.
Again, 513-419-7100 to talk to us. And Dave in Western Hills joins us right now. Hi, Dave.
Thank you very much for having the program. My wife and I are interested in adopting, and recently I learned that when you foster to adopt, there is, I was told, a 94% rate of return to the birth parents over time in the state of Ohio. And that seemed terrifyingly high to us, since our end goal is to adopt. I was just wondering if you knew anything more about that. I know the state of Indiana, the governor announced that he wanted to make their state the easiest to adopt in. And when there's a 94% return rate to the birth parents in Ohio, that seems really difficult. So is there anything going to happen?
So first of all, I would say that in understanding how the law works that frees for children for adoption, really what has to happen first is a period of attempted reunification. And I think most people can understand a little bit about why that would be. Sometimes people first look at abuse and neglect and think, why would kids ever go home? But there are a lot of factors affecting abuse and neglect, including generational poverty. And the county's first obligation when they take a child into custody is actually not only to have that child placed safely in foster care, but also to work with the family toward reunification. And that can mean providing all sorts of services, mental health services, substance abuse services, assistance with housing. And so their first duty as the county when they take a child is to attempt to reunify them. On the other hand, that doesn't mean that in every situation kids do end up going home. But the county also doesn't know what the result is going to be when they start down this path. Their first obligation is to make sure kids are safe. And that's why foster care homes are so desperately needed. Now, we all have to be very honest about how difficult that is. You know, foster care parents open their homes and their hearts to these kids. And even if they don't intend to adopt, they fall in love with these kids, mm-hmm. as you can well imagine. And it is very hard to let these kids go. And that's what why that role is so critically important, that there are people who can do that. You know, I think what's hard and why people who do want to adopt often come in through the foster care system is there isn't a whole lot of opportunity to adopt, for instance, an infant in a lot of other ways. And so sometimes people will say, you know what, we're going to take the risk, even if this child is going to go home, so we have the opportunity to adopt an infant. In any given time in Hamilton County, there are more than 100 older kids waiting for adoption. They're kids who are part of sibling sets waiting for adoption. So those are some of the more likely paths. And also, if you go to Hamilton County Jobs and Family Services website, HC Kids, you'll find kids who are currently available for adoption. There is not any legal risk that those children who are already permanently committed will be going home.
Wendell, what's been the toughest part about being a foster CASA for you? What's that?
The toughest part, if I had to say, is probably just getting used to just dealing with the uncertainty. As Tracy mentioned, the children are removed from homes and are placed in with a relative or in a foster home. And you're looking at this child in the eye and they keep asking you, well, when can I go back to mommy? And it kind of breaks your heart because we don't know. And even if we did know, we couldn't tell them because it's not determined. There's a lot of circumstances and goals that have to be met before that reunification can happen. So to answer your question, the toughest part is just looking the child in the eye and basically telling them you don't know when they can get back to mommy because mommy's not ready for you to come back home yet. And explaining to them what we have to do now moving forward until mom's ready to have you come back home.
And it sounds in some ways it's like being a foster parent because you have that uncertainty as to whether you're going to be able to keep the child yourself.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Cameron, what about you? What do you think are the frustrating points of being a CASA?
That you can't fix it. You can't make it all better. You can't go in and wave your wand and
at least not right away, right?
Not right away. Yeah. But that's also not really your role. Your role is to be kind of a guardian angel a little bit and just shepherd that child through whatever happens that you might not have any control over, but you're going to be there paying attention and making sure you're doing the due diligence and doing your best to make sure they're getting the resources they need and that it's the best outcome possible for them.
We had a question from Twitter, Tracy. They wanted to see if you could talk about the opiate epidemic and how it's affecting kids in foster care.
So it is very much affecting kids in foster care. Unfortunately, any kind of wave of dysfunction that you see in society causes kids to come into foster care. So right now, heroin is a big causal factor. But I've been doing this long enough that I remember when crack cocaine was a big causal factor. Mental health issues, untreated mental health issues are a big causal factor. So whatever's going on in larger society is definitely affecting our kids. And I think the thing that I would really want people to know more than anything is I think people start to get overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. They read news stories or see local news, and they start to feel like there's nothing they can do. And that's the very reason we wanted to be here today, Mark, to talk to you and your audience is this is a very empowering thing. If you go to ProKids.org, if you call 281-2000, what you're going to find is there's actually a way for you to make a difference, because what we're doing at ProKids is simply mobilizing a community. And we're mobilizing a community to break a cycle of abuse and neglect that's typically spanned generations in a family. And I think one of the most surprising things to people is they say, how can that possibly be effective? Well, I'll give you an example. In 2014, abuse and neglect stopped for 98% of the kids served by ProKids, and that's a rate we've maintained for almost two decades. So I don't want people to feel helpless. I don't want them to feel like, you know, every trend that is negative in our society spells doom for these children. In fact, if an army of people come forward, because we need volunteers, we need more CASAs, there are more and more kids will be able to change the arc of their lives.
So I wonder if somebody says to you, how can one person really make a difference? What do you say to them?
Well, first I say, yes, you can, as an individual. You can make a difference with these children. I will tell you, Tracy mentioned the heroin epidemic. As a CASA volunteer, I now watch the news differently. Whenever you hear the news, a heroin overdose, children in a car, I immediately start thinking about that child. What's going to happen to the child? Because you know the child's going to be removed from the home and placed somewhere else. And I start thinking, we need more CASA volunteers to make sure that child is taken care of so that they don't fall into that same cycle that they find that their parents are falling into.
And we also need CASA volunteers that come from different backgrounds. We have a lot of people that think that the only way they can be a CASA volunteer is if they're retired or they have extra time on their hands for the training and for the commitment. And I'd like to say I work full-time at Cincinnati Children's, and this is very doable. like the training itself is doable. And working within the court system, the court and Pro Kids and Hamilton County Jobs and Family Services, everybody does their best. You are an integral part of the system. So they're never going to schedule court at a time that you're not available. So I think I just like people to be aware of that, because I think people get intimidated by the time commitment or what the perceived time commitment. And it's really, really doable and incredibly rewarding.
And Mark, I just wanted to hop on something that Cameron said. When you mentioned court, there might be listeners who are wondering, why are they called court-appointed special advocates? Why are we in court? And what most people don't realize is that the government can't simply come in your home and take your child. There has to be judicial oversight. And it's Hamilton County Juvenile Court that provides that oversight. So they give permission for children to be placed in foster care, and then they monitor and approve everything that's happening with that child the entire time they're in foster care. Everything from approving the services that the child will receive to ultimately who will raise the child.
So does the court also decide who the CASA will be?
Correct. They're court appointed. So we actually, as a staff, will say to the court, we have this lovely CASA, and we will actually draft the entry, and the court will sign the entry appointing the CASA. And the CASA works very closely with our staff. We have staff members called CASA managers who work very closely with the CASAs, and they're actually supervising the CASAs in their role. We also have staff attorneys because of this being a legal process to determine what the child's best interests are. As a team, the so-called advocacy team, every day what we're working on is advocating on behalf of the child's best interests, both in and out of court.
Okay. 513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Mimi in Hyde Park. Hi, Mimi.
Hi. I want to let you all know that I am currently a CASA. Ooh. I've been a CASA for a couple of years and have closed three cases, and I wanted to touch on two different things. The first of which has to do with the time per week, which I would agree is about 2 to 3 hours. I want to say that the CASAs are volunteers, obviously, and they typically have a little bit more time than most to actually get to know the children, to understand where they are, what they're doing, and what their needs are. The other thing I wanted to say was that we are actually a party to the case, and the magistrate really values what a CASA has to say, because the magistrate also realizes that we are lucky enough to get to spend more time than most getting to know the kids. And the second thing, the other thing that I wanted to talk about was the training. I was a little intimidated about the training program when I became a CASA. They've made some changes now, and what I want to say is that the schedule varies on different days of the week, different times of day, different times during the day, and that you don't have to do the training in a particular order. You don't have to start with class one and then go 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You can take them as they fit into your schedule, and I think that that's really important for people to know.
Well, and Mimi is an outstanding volunteer all the way around, and she makes a really good point, which is we want you to be able to have a life in addition to volunteering. And so one of the most important things is if you want to go straight through and take every class as offered, you can get done in as little as 7 weeks, but you can take up to 6 months. We understand that it's not just about a commitment of time. It's about a commitment of, you know, your heart, that you're going to be this child's advocate, that you're going to give this child a voice. And some people just can do that more quickly and get through the training than others. So we're very flexible about our training.
I mean, just as an example, I have a couple of physicians and resident physicians at Cincinnati Children's I know that are still in training that are CASAs. So it's definitely doable if they can do it.
513-419-7100 to join us. Let's talk with Galen in Loveland. Hi, Galen.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I'm also a CASA, and the main reason I wanted to call was just to ask Tracy to describe the difference in the outcome for children that come into the Hamilton County system when they have Pro Kids behind them versus the outcome of those that don't.
So first of all, hi, Galen. Happy New Year.
Hi, Galen.
So what I would say is, first of all, county governments, county jobs and family services report certain statistics to both the state and the federal government. And in some ways, those statistics are similar to the ones ProKids keeps, and some aren't. And so what I would say is it's easier to describe the difference between having a CASA and the national statistic than it really is anything local. So first of all, what I would say is the lack of reoccurrence of abuse. The fact that abuse and neglect stop for 98% of the kids served by ProKids is huge. Other things are in regard to whether they're going to be with their siblings. And in 2014, 84% of the kids served by ProKids at the time, even that their case closed, they were with siblings, compared to nationally about 25%. You know, the other things that we work really hard on is obviously making sure that they ultimately end up, these children end up in a safe, permanent, nurturing home. And in 2014, 93% did. When you look nationally, some of the statistics that you really worry about are often related to aging out youth. So for instance, lifelong, only about 58% of kids who age out of foster care will ever get a high school diploma or a GED, versus in 2014, 70% of our kids who aged out did. So I think there are 10,000 differences. We actually keep about 24 outcome measures, and people can look at our website at prokids.org and search the term outcomes and find out exactly, you know, what our specific things are that we track. Nationally, what's happening with foster care children is they typically move every year they're in foster care. So part of what we track is stability. They tend to change schools and attendance isn't good. So for example, kids often, when they change placements, will not get enrolled right away, or they might have mental health or behavioral issues and they don't go to school. So 2 years ago, we started looking at attendance issues very hard and added a goal. And in 2014, 71% of our kids attended at least 90% of the school year. When we had diagnosed the problem prior to that, we had had about 60% of kids 4 years ago who were either truant or nearly truant. Mm-hmm. And what we did is then we trained our CASA volunteers to really go after those attendance issues and jump on them right away. So CASAs make difference in just, first of all, being there. There's huge amount of turnover, unfortunately, on the front line in terms of social workers, therapists, and service providers. CASAs are often the only person involved in a child's life who's not paid to be there. So there are all sorts of ways, big and small, that CASAs make a difference every day in the lives of these children.
We had an email from a gentleman who said he's so thankful for the foster care system because it helped him to learn different ways of thinking. Mm. He says eventually he had helped him get into an elite university. So
that's fantastic. That
goes along with what you were saying, I'd say.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And you know, I think one of the things people have to understand about being a CASA volunteer, it's not just a good deed. It is unbelievably rewarding.
Yes.
We have a young man who just got his master's degree in May and is now working for a major university on the West Coast. And this is a kid who went through over 20 different placements while he was in foster care. This is a kid who was so angry he would end up in altercations with teachers and administrators in his school. And this is a child who found a way to hang on to people like the staff at ProKids and volunteers working with him to start to see there was another way to live. And he broke the cycle himself of abuse and neglect that had been longstanding in his family.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us this afternoon, ProKids Executive Director Tracy Cook, CASA Volunteer and Clinical Research Coordinator at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, Cameron Lowy, and CASA Volunteer Wendell Watts. You can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Wendell, you know, in fairness, I asked you what the frustrating parts are about being a CASA, so what are the good parts?
The good parts is just experiencing the fact that you're making a difference.
Yes.
I can give you an example in one of my current cases with a three-year-old girl who's obviously her and her siblings were removed from the home because of neglect. And when I first went to the house for my first visit and met her, all I got was a mean stare and blank eyes. And she actually would not interact with me. My wife will actually also happens to be a CASA, was able to interact with her. So I set it as a goal myself to help this young girl get back her trust in the male figure in the house, because she obviously had been abused and just did not trust males. So now when I come to the house, not only is she smiling, she's greeting me, calling my name, "Hi, Mr. Wendell," and she's running up and giving me a big hug at the door, whereas before all I got was mean stares before that point. So.
Cameron, what about you?
I would say, so the little girl in my case, it's been really rewarding to see how developmentally advanced she is and how her foster family is taking full advantage of that. So I think she might be like the next, is it Dominique Dawes? Is that the gymnast I'm thinking
yeah,
of?
Yeah.
She is climbing on everything. And so they've channeled all that energy into getting her into gymnastics, getting her into swimming. And it's so amazing to see her go to her doctors of visits and they're like, well, she's way advanced in terms of her fine motor skills, her gross motor skills. That's been really rewarding to see just how happy and safe she feels.
Let's talk with Michelle in Evendale. Good afternoon, Michelle. Michelle, hello. We've lost Michelle, I think. Well, Michelle wanted to ask, that it was something we were kind of touching on before, it's the importance of men volunteering to be CASAs, because there are so many young men that you're working with, right?
Exactly. And we do, and I'll make a plea now, we do need more male volunteers as CASAs. Not that I complain about sitting in a room full of intelligent, beautiful women all the time, but yeah, we do need more male figures there. The scenario I gave you earlier, we can have an impact on some of these young girls who have lost the trust of men because of abuse in their past. Also, in the same case, I've got a seventh grade male who actually, he lights up as well when I talk to him. I sat down with him and asked him what was his problems, and he was struggling with math. So I said, pull out your math book. So we worked through some algebra problems, and he just kind of looked at me and goes, you know, no one's ever done that with me before. Oh. So now he has an interest in math, and I think because he trusted a male figure there to reveal some of his vulnerabilities. And so that's worked out perfectly.
Cameron, what's the difference, though, between being a CASA and being a mentor?
I think that's a pretty important distinction to make, actually, because we are not supposed to be their best friend, and we're not supposed to mentor them. We are supposed to pay attention and make sure they're getting the services they need. There are going to be times where we make decisions that they don't agree with or they don't like, and where we maybe have to report that they're not showing up to school or that they're playing hooky, or we have to touch base about the fact that they're not turning in their homework or whatever the case may be. Like, so now that you're a parent per se, but you are that extra set of eyes, and it's not your job to be their best friend. It's your job to do what's in their best interest to the best of your ability.
And Mark, I think one of the things that we have to be so careful about with kids in this situation is, you know, kids view themselves sometimes as magical and in control, especially young kids. And they can even think if they express a wish, that means it's going to happen. And CASAs work really hard to create the right kind of trusting relationships with these very traumatized children to say, you know what, it's very important that I know and understand what you think and feel, but my job is to recommend what I believe is in your best interest. And sometimes what they want is different from what is best. Sometimes they're the same. And I think that maintaining of boundaries is super important to have the kind of lifelong impact that we're talking about.
Yes.
Let's talk with Rachel in Mount Washington. Good afternoon, Rachel.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question. I have, sort of had it in the back of my mind for quite some time to foster or maybe even foster to adopt. But I have two small children, a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old boys. And interestingly enough, my 7-year-old boy has expressed interest in adopting, which is just so empathetic. But anyways, you know, I had always envisioned an older child, but I'm getting a lot of pushback from, you know, I am friends with a social worker, you know, sort of trying to discourage that idea. Do you have any stories or, you know, have you placed older children where there is younger siblings, and have any success stories about those situations?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the warnings you may hear from people have to do with the fact that these kids have gone through quite a bit of trauma. And if they're an older child, sometimes this has been trauma that's been going on for years at a time. And really the key is, you know, is the child getting the support and the services they need? Have they been appropriately assessed to see if they need some kind of mental health intervention? You know, do they have the right kind of support in school so they're successful, so that they're not coming home and acting out because they're frustrated? You know, there are a lot of different things that can be put into place. And I think the key is really to find out more. I think sometimes people hesitate to take the first step. And so I would strongly encourage you, you know, to Google Foster Care Cincinnati, start a discussion with some of the private networks and talk about what the real possibilities are. A foster care parent never has to say yes to a particular placement. So even if you become trained as a foster care parent decide to become an adoptive parent, you know, you are matched. It's not as if you're told you have to take this particular child. But I would encourage you to find out more, since it's been in the back of your mind and it's also in your son's heart.
Sherry from Claremont County now joins us. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
I am calling. I am currently a foster parent, and I am also an adoptive parent. I am on my second placement currently, and my question is about this 12 and 24 law, which mm-hmm. is basically if a child is in foster care for 12 months out of 2 years, that they basically will be placed up for adoption to find a forever home. And our job as being a foster parent is to make sure that the child is loved and cared for and in a stable environment. And I happen to see a lot of adoptions, and you see that a child has been in foster care for 800, 900 days, which is well over a year's worth of time. And kind of wondering, I can understand judges giving 3 months extension or 6 months extension for the birth parents to basically fulfill their plan to get their child back. But why are most of these cases continuing on with a child in foster care for 800, 900 days?
Well, first of all, the first thing I have to say is thank you so much for what you're doing for our kids. And second of all, there are some misconceptions about the 12 months out of 24 rule. What the law requires is that the county must file a motion requesting that the court free the child for adoption, but it doesn't mean that the court has to grant it. So I think there's some confusion there that it's kind of a black and white situation. Once you've hit the 12 months, surely the child's going to be freed for adoption. That whole requirement really stems out of a federal law that was trying to get more jurisdictions nationwide to start looking at the length of time and care. What I can tell you is our local juvenile court actually looks at the waiting periods for kids, both in terms of those kids who've had a motion filed to free them for adoption or even just kids coming into the system. And they follow very closely how many days the child's been in the system. If a child is over certain amounts, there's actually a discussion that goes on not only within the court, but the court generates a discussion with the other parties in the case about the length of time that the child's been waiting. So sometimes anecdotally, people will say, I've seen these situations where kids are waiting exorbitant amount of times. What I can tell you is that generally those are outliers, and that our court, the magistrate at Hamilton County Juvenile Court, is looking at the number of days and trying to push the child to permanency as soon as possible.
Well, thank you everybody for joining me this afternoon.
Mark, thank you so much. And I just want to encourage people to go to prokids.org to find out more. We have informational sessions every other week called Snapshots, and they can find them on our website.
You'll find a link to the ProKids website at wvxu.org. ProKids Executive Director Tracy Cook, CASA Volunteer and Clinical Research Coordinator at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, Cameron Lowy, and CASA Volunteer Wendell Watts.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thanks, Mark.